May it please the court.
You can take your mask off.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This case has evolved from one involving patent infringement to one involving only state law breach of contract issues. The parties have presented three such issues. The first issue is presentment, which is a statutory prerequisite to recovery of attorney's fees under Texas law. The substance of the presentment issue is a question of Texas law, but the procedure for proving presentment is a question of federal law, specifically Rule 54D. That rule provides that fees are to be determined by post-judgment motion practice rather than a trial, and hence by the court rather than by the jury. It prescribes the content of a motion for attorney's fees, which does not include the supporting
evidence. This depends on your continued success as with respect to your license breach claim against Warner.
That is correct, Your Honor.
I hope you're going to spend some time on
that. I'd be happy to divert directly to that, court, please. That was my second issue, which is the propriety of the judgment in favor of PHP against Mr. Huang for breach of the royalty agreement resulting in $622,000.
What section of the royalty agreement are you relying on for breach? My understanding is that it's Section 5.
Well, it's both Sections 4 and 5, Your Honor.
What about the report and recommendation recommending summary judgment on the breach of the royalty provisions?
Well, the trial court interpreted that as relating to subsection 4 and based its overruling of the Rule 50 motion on Section 5. Perhaps that is correct. Perhaps it is incorrect. Our position is that it doesn't matter whether it's correct or incorrect.
But you're not appealing that. You did not appeal that, right?
We did not raise a point relating to that. It was subsumed in the final judgment, and the final judgment was in our favor, so there was nothing for us to appeal on that point.
But, okay, maybe I'm misunderstanding. I thought there was a report and recommendation that prohibited your claim for royalties under paragraph 4 of the assignment agreement.
That's correct.
And that issue is not before us. That's a final determination that is not before us, right?
I must disagree with that, Your Honor. The final judgment that is before you is the final judgment rendered by the trial court at the end of the case, which subsumed all interlocutory orders.
Well, how did it subsume a breach of paragraph 4?
Well, it subsumed the summary judgment order, which the court then interpreted as being based on Section 4 rather than Section 5.
Where did the court interpret that?
In its post-judgment order.
And what did it say?
It said the summary judgment was based on Section 4, but a breach of Section 5 could give rise to a duty to make periodic payments of royalties.
Okay, but how does that translate into the judgment being based on a breach of Section 4?
The judgment was based on the jury's findings of unpaid royalties within 4 years of the filing of suit.
No, I don't think that's correct. The jury's verdict was based on a breach of the assignment provision.
It was based on a breach of the royalty agreement. It was not told.
How was the breach of the royalty agreement before them if summary judgment had already been granted against you on that point?
Because evidence of that breach and resultant damages were introduced at trial.
Without any vacation of that summary judgment order or any indication that the district court had changed its mind on that?
Yes, Your Honor, but also without a timely objection from Mr. Huang.
Well, isn't the better way to understand it is that evidence was introduced as damages for breach of Section 5, not as some kind of sub silentio reinvocation of a Section 4 argument?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the jury was not told about the summary judgment. They were not told you can only find a breach of the royalty agreement based on a failure to obtain consent for a license.
Okay, but were they instructed that they could find a breach of Section 4?
They were not instructed as to Section 4 or Section 5 or any particular section of the agreement.
Doesn't your closing argument rely on the provisions of Section 5?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if we did.
It does.
All right.
Okay, and when I look at the district court's decision at page A12, the district court says that it granted summary judgment on Section 4, but it didn't grant summary judgment on Section 5.
That's correct.
Okay, so the breach is based on Section 5.
In the district court's mind, that's right. Our position is not necessarily.
Well, you didn't appeal the grant of summary judgment on Section 4 here.
We could not have appealed that.
Of course you could have. You lost on the Section 4 breach argument.
We recovered all the damages that we could possibly have recovered. Well, not all that we could
have recovered. Not necessarily. Not if we conclude you're time-barred under Section 5. Section 4 would provide a different independent basis for those damages that isn't subject to a statute of limitations argument.
But we can't appeal the loss of one rationale for relief.
You can appeal it as an alternative ground for sustaining the judgment, right? You can argue it.
Well, what we did do is we argued that the trial court was entitled to revise its summary judgment if it did so without prejudice to the opposing party.
What's the evidence that the district court thought it was revising its summary judgment ruling when it sustained the jury verdict under Section 5?
It didn't, Your Honor. There is no such evidence, Your Honor. We're arguing in the alternative that the trial court correctly interpreted its summary judgment. Or in the alternative...
What's your basis for... I thought you just conceded that district court viewed the judgment as resting on Section 5.
I did, Your Honor, and it did.
So? I mean, that doesn't suggest that the district court changed its mind about Section 4.
But my colleague suggests that the district court was wrong in doing so. What I'm suggesting in the alternative is if the district court was wrong in doing so, if that was not a correct interpretation of the summary judgment order, the district court was nevertheless entitled to do what it did by way of revision of its summary judgment order.
You say by way of revision, but it didn't revise it. Did it?
Well,
where in the district court's opinions did it say it was revising the summary judgment order on Section 4?
It did not say that, Your Honor.
Well, why do you keep talking about the district court revising its order when it didn't revise it?
Because if the district court improperly interpreted its order, that could be construed as a revision of the order. I grant you there is no evidence that the district court was intending to do that, but my colleague argues that that is the effect of what the district court did. An argument is...
I don't think that's what they're arguing at all. I think they're arguing that the district court's decision is, and the jury's verdict is based on a breach of paragraph 5, and that paragraph 5's claims are time barred.
Well,
do you agree that paragraph 5 claims are time barred?
No, Your Honor. Absolutely not. What the district court said was a breach of Section 5 could give rise to a duty to make periodic royalty payments. Not just damages measured by royalties that happen to be paid periodically, but a duty to make periodic royalty payments. That's what the district court said.
Even if that were true, I don't see how you get outside the statute of limitations.
Because the breach is
the assignment. And while the measure of damages or the resultant remedy may be periodic payments, the breach is something that happened outside the statute of limitations.
Your Honor, that's not the only breach of Section 5. What the district court said was the jury was entitled to find a duty to make periodic royalty payments for received under an assignment that was a breach of Section 5. Those periodic royalty payments, each failure to make one, is a separate breach.
Where in Section 5 does it talk about a periodic duty to make royalty payments?
It doesn't specifically talk about that, Your Honor.
Whether that's a permissible view of Section 5 is a legal question for us, right?
That is correct.
And if we disagree and find that there was only one breach of the licensing agreement, the original license some 10 years ago, then it's barred by the statute of limitations, isn't it?
If the court rejects my argument that the district court was entitled to and had the effect of, its order had the effect of revising the summary judgment, if the court rejects that, and it rejects the argument that there's a periodic payment of royalties under Section 5, then we have no leg to stand on. With that, I believe my rebuttal time is
at a minimum,
reserved,
have to have the
unless the court has any other questions.
And those seven,
okay,
as the board found, so if you link drugs to a lineage-independent list, you get...
Ms. Savinsky?
So you're saying that even if you put something, an input that's lineage independent, you could never have an output that's not.
May it please the court. Good morning. I too will start with the statute of limitations issue because, as the court correctly noted, if you agree with us that the claim is time barred, then you need not reach Plastronics' first appeal point on attorney's fees at all. So, a few additional points on this that was not covered in Plastronics' opening arguments. It's important to recognize that Plastronics only presented a breach of paragraph 5 claim to the jury. As Your Honor correctly noted, that's what their closing argument referred to, but it's also important to note that a question about whether Mr. Huang had received royalties came up during trial, and there was a colloquy with the district court about that, and the district court asked where this was going, because he was trying to decide whether or not he should grant leave from the motion in limine.
Can you give us the appendix page for this?
Yes, Your Honor. This is at...
I might end up treating that tumor, let's make it easier, let's make it breast cancer. I may end up treating that tumor.
Oh, I thought I could.
And that may say something as well. But it's very different. Looking at the outcome.
Yes, appendix 9449 through 9452. So the district court is asking Plastronics at this portion of the transcript where they plan to go with this line of questioning, because the district court is trying to evaluate whether to grant leave for them to go into this area of questioning, given there was a motion in limine granted on claims that were already adjudicated. And Plastronics says they will not pursue the claim. They will not pursue the issue.
Where is that?
So this argument, this portion starts at 9449.
Where's the specific quote where they say, we're not going to pursue this?
Give me one moment to grab it.
I guess it's at the bottom of 9451.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. At the bottom of page 9451, Mr. Dalton says, I will stop pursuing this line of questioning, Your Honor. And when the trial goes back on the record in front of...
What's the motion in limine that he's referring to?
Sure. It was a motion in limine that there would be no questioning on claims that had already been adjudicated at summary judgment, which was the paragraph 4 claim.
Okay.
And my point in raising this, Your Honor, is that Plastronics only tried a breach of paragraph 5 claim to the jury.
Where do we find the text of paragraph 5? I know it's in the brief.
Sure. The royalty agreement itself is at appendix 12427. So it's at the very, very end of the appendix.
One, two.
The board equated the result. I get to the result of an off-label drug. As
and I can read it to Your Honor if that's helpful
no,
as well.
That's okay.
Okay.
And importantly, you'll note that that paragraph does not itself say anything about periodic payments or royalty payments. And as we pointed out in our blue brief, every single periodic payment case that's been cited in this appeal requires that the underlying breach be one of an obligation that requires periodic payments. Paragraph 5 doesn't require that, so the periodic payment case law is entirely inapplicable to a breach of paragraph 5.
You're smiling. You're going to ask me a question.
And I also wanted to point out that regardless
of... So what they did with respect to paragraph 5, said if there hadn't, if we'd consented to the assignment, we would have gotten royalty payments under paragraph 4. That was their theory, right?
Correct, Your Honor. But that goes to the measure of damages for paragraph 5. That if there was a cause of lost royalties, right, and a measure of damages does not impact the statute of limitations analysis, because the statute of limitations is a question of liability. We don't get to damages if their claim is time barred. The last point I would make is that the case law about amending a summary judgment order requires notice, and as Your Honor's already pointed out, there was no notice that happened in this case. And that's important because the damages evidence that HICON co-limited presented, that the jury ultimately adopted when awarding Plastronics damages on this claim, was based on HICON co-limited's alternative damages theory for a patent infringement claim. Mr. Wong did not present any evidence that royalties would be the proper measure of damages for this claim, and in fact, Plastronics presented evidence that this was properly measured by lost profits. If the court does not have any other questions on the statute of limitations issue, I will move on to Plastronics' second appeal point, which is the appeal point about socket damages or socket royalties. Plastronics' argument is that they need not pay a royalty based on sockets because the party that received the obligation to pay under the contract does not make sockets. Now, it's important to go back to the obligation that the parties originally negotiated in the royalty agreement. Mr. Wong negotiated a royalty that would be paid when Plastronics Socket, the pre-merger entity, made and sold sockets containing these
agents. I guess this question is really one of contractual intent. In other words, when the parties negotiated this contract, did they contemplate that the entity would pay royalties on pins sold together with sockets, which they clearly did, and did they contemplate that obligation could be avoided by this divisive merger, right?
Correct. And the answer to that is no. They did not contemplate that this obligation could be avoided. First, Mr. Huang also negotiated an anti-assignment clause. But the divisive merger under Texas law cannot be used to avoid a contractual obligation. And that goes to the cases that we cited in our 28J letter, In re Aldrich Pump and In re DBMP, both of which say that the, quote, unwavering and stated policy behind Texas divisional merger statute is that a divisive merger cannot abridge any right or rights of creditors. So under the law, the divisive merger cannot be used to undo a contractual obligation. And this would obviously lead to abuse if Plastronics' view of the world were the one that we live in. For example, Plastronics could have undergone a divisive merger where they allocated the liabilities under the contract to an entity that has no operations at all. It doesn't make pins or sockets. And then their argument would be that they no longer owe any royalty. And that's clearly not what was negotiated for in the contract. So the question is twofold. One, what does the contract say? What was the contractual intent? And then the second is, what does the divisive merger do to that contractual intent or that contracted royalty? And the answer is nothing. It merely changes which hand has to reach into its pocket and pay. It doesn't change the underlying nature of the obligation. And this is also supported by the law of the case. Plastronics argued numerous times in front of the district court that the divisive merger was proper and that it did not run afoul of the anti-assignment and anti-transfer clauses because it was merely a change of corporate form. It did not involve an increased risk to Mr. Huang. And the district court agreed. I was quoting from the district court's recommendation on 12C at Appendix 8218. The district court also found that a divisive merger cannot alter the relative rights among the parties. That's at Appendix 8235. So several times, Plastronics argued, or Plastronics HPEN argued to the district court, that they should be permitted to gain by the divisive merger. So, for example, Plastronics HPEN, the newly created entity, can practice the 602 patent patent. It didn't run afoul. Their ability to practice the patent doesn't run afoul of the anti-assignment provisions. But yet here, they don't want to pay their obligation under the contract. And this divisive merger cannot be used as both a sword and a shield. And my last point on this, Your Honors, is that even if the court decides that the district court erred in the law, you should allow a retrial on damages. Mr. Wong presented evidence of what damages should be based on the law as the district court had held multiple times, and he should not be punished with a render for following that law.
They say, we may find you in the case.
And with that, I will yield the rest of my time to rebuttal unless the court has any other questions.
What exists now.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to find in the future that BRAF may be helpful, not just not helpful. And so, and this is important to the board correctly, if you're going to say to patent, don't hold us to the state of the art now, well then, you're not held to the state of the art for all purposes. So I agree with His Honor, but I think it's kind of more fundamental than that. You can't draw the assumption that...
May it please the court. I want to try and simplify and restate the limitations issue. The jury had before it evidence that Mr. Huang had licensed the Korean patent, which came in only over an untimely objection. It had evidence before it of what the royalties would be.
Your Honor,
under that license,
a very important
it was told that it could award royalties within the 4 years preceding the filing of suit. It found a breach, and it found damages consistent with the evidence.
And elsewhere,
so,
but I understand that that's what they were told, but if that was legal error, it doesn't matter what the jury found as to damages. If the time limitations had already passed for that license breach claim,
now what counsel just did, and this has been a little bit of a frustration for us throughout the
But by definition, it was told that it could award lost royalty payments within the last 4 years. By definition,
that was legal error.
With all due respect, Your Honor, it was not.
You're saying by saying that somehow the district court implicitly revived a breach of royalty payment claim under Section 4. Is that what you're saying?
Because Mr. Huang allowed evidence of such to come in without objection. Without timely objection. That's right, Your Honor.
Where's the jury instruction you're just referring to?
I don't have the immediate... yes, I do.
I think it's just that this is an amorphous concept that if scientists knew it well...
Page 9944. As to the royalty agreement, damages for...
We're going to say we get credit for it. But fundamentally, Your Honor's point was...
It's the two paragraphs beginning, however, in the middle of the page.
The underlying insight that we should be looking to the genotyping, the genetic markers, not necessarily to the cancer, the one original cancer, that was well known. And we laid out five examples with Herceptin, Erbitux, and Iressa, and Gleevec. And then more generally, Dr. Spellman talked about... let me get this right, the Sawyer 2004 article that went into detail why you
and so
the
there was pleading, there was evidence, and there was a finding, and accordingly there was no valid 50B motion. So the district court properly rendered judgment on the jury's verdict on that point. Briefly, with respect to the issue of...
Can I just back up? I'm having a hard time following.
Of course not.
Can we go back up to the... It says, in line 4, it says, in terminating the damages award to Mr. Wong, you should consider
Your Honor,
what Plastonics agreed to pay but has not paid to Mr. Wong. Right? As for the assignment agreement, that's the license provision, right? If you find a breach of that agreement occurred before January 19th, then you should not award any damages for breach of the assignment agreement.
The same interrogation, The system
is that the statute of limitations date we're talking about?
That is.
Okay.
Treating cancers other than breast cancer.
And then it says, as to the royalty agreement, damages
for treating virtually any disease
can be made
for which there exists an established
after that date.
Between a
is that clear that that's talking about damages to your client, or is that talking about damages to Mr. Wong, who also had a breach of royalty claim?
I would have to check, Your Honor, but I believe that that is either that is applicable to both sides' claims, or I may have missed
it. I mean, knowing that you had already lost on summary judgment on the royalty agreement, why wouldn't we understand this as only calling for royalty payments to Mr. Wong? Absent some clear indication that this is directed to your client as opposed to Mr. Wong.
First of all, because the district court submitted a damage question on our breach of the royalty agreement. But secondly, and I apologize for not having it at the tip of my tongue, but if this is not the provision applicable to...
I mean, it starts out at near the top of page 59 talking about what we're going to award to Mr. Wong, not what they're going to award to your client.
Yes, I see that.
Are you pointing to the wrong portion of the jury?
I may be. My time has expired unless there are any other questions.
There is a different
okay, thank you, Mr. General. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.
I will keep this very short. Your Honor, you're correct that that jury instruction did apply to... I'm sorry. Cross appeal point is actually the statute of limitations point, so...
We're not exactly sure.
Thankfully, we have gotten to speak about that today.
The statute of limitations is not cross appeal. That's their appeal. You don't have any right to rebuttal with respect to the statute.
I'm a little confused why this is designated a cross appeal at all, because the statute of limitations is just a ground to overturn. I guess it's a ground to overturn that. I think we've already heard about that.
That's fine. Unless the court has any other questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.